They just keep coming, one scribble after another.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Our guest today is Steve Semkin, author and founder of Ice Cube Press. After that, a visit with Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac on Scribble.
Met you about 3 years ago when you were in town to do a Mississippi Valley Writers Conference, and I was on the program too. And I was intrigued even then, and I'm even more so now, by the little press you run called Ice Cube Press. Can you tell us something about it? How did it get started?
Well, yeah, first of all, this show Scribble is great. I'm already scribbling on a piece of paper. But I started the press in 1993, and mostly because I graduated from college and I'd always wanted to be a writer, and yet, like most people, I wasn't really getting any closer to being a writer than I ever was. And in between breaks at work, I would go down to this bookstore. It was about half a block away, and I realized I really need to do something that has to do with writing. And then I started doing a newsletter. And then I wrote a book, and I started getting submissions for more books. And I've always had another job. At that point, I'd always had two jobs. So a lot of people think, how did you start this press? Did you just start it one day? I said, no, I went for the first 14, 15 years always having a job at the same time. And I've just loved the Midwest, and I was inspired to use the literary arts to better understand how we can live here in this vaguely called place we call the Midwest.
Well, you know, it must make it easier to get your own books published now.
Yeah, it does. You know, in some ways, I had somebody the other day, they were like, you know, I said, when I started in 93, I didn't think of that many people as self-publishing. And now it happens all the time. Of course, I'm not opposed to it. That's how I got started. And a lot of the times I think that's the best way to have done it. All my authors that I have now should thank me for doing my own book. Because really, I didn't know much about sales. I didn't know much about printing. I didn't know about getting books into bookstores. I've been in business over 20 years, and I like to tell people without a degree in business, marketing, advertising, editing, book design, anything, I still, despite all that, I'm still successful anyway. And so I know people self-publish a lot now. And but I don't know. I had to use offset printing when I did that very first book, and that's definitely not the route that that self-publishing is taking these days.
How does Ice Cube Press manage to be successful? It seems to me that marketing would be a real problem.
And distribution.
And distribution, yeah.
Honestly, everything's a problem. I mean, the reason I'm successful is that you know, you hear about acquisition, and so the most important thing I do is I pick authors, and I don't get focused on a particular kind of person. I don't get focused on a particular theme. I am vaguely literary arts to better understand the Midwest, but that could take poetry, that takes biography, that takes fiction, that takes essays. I mean, I'm kind of hoping for that day when someone brings me a science fiction novel on the Midwest, because I'm interested in a lot of things. And I mean, the reason why a small press works for me is that one of my previous jobs was as a sales rep. And that, even though I hated that job, that's probably been the one job that I'm most thankful to have had in my life, because without that ability to call up stores and then follow up and then follow up again and keep saying, you know, my name's Steve. I know I talked to you last week. I'm curious if you've made a decision on that, on carrying this book yet. And that really, I think, separates a lot of small publishers from...
Well, you know, there's a lot of hoorah these days about distribution. Mm-hmm. Amazon moving in to kind of a control publishing.
Yes.
But How do you get your books out? I remember once when I published a book, and I didn't publish it, but I wrote it, and the store that was going to carry it had to get something from a central distributor or something. It was a pretty involved process. Yeah, how do you get books out?
I'm involved in that, too. I mean, I had the exact same thing. I first started, I was going to have an event for someone at a Barnes & Noble, and they said, well, are you available with such and such in this place? Because we can't get the books otherwise. And I thought to myself, well, I need to overcome that obstacle right now. And so you go out and you find a wholesaler or distributor, and I have a place called Partners Books in Michigan. And that way I'm able to cover all the big – I mean, I have national distribution, and you know they sell to libraries. They do Ingram. They do Baker & Taylor. They do their own sales. And then I have a sales rep, Miller Book Trade Marketing in Chicago, and they go to shows, and he sends out my catalogs. And, I mean, it's all a dying art to a certain extent. I mean, there's hardly any independent book sales reps out there that go and visit stores because they just – the publishers don't want to support those people going to the small towns because they're not placing big enough orders, or there's online catalogs, and Amazon, of course, is a huge factor in all of it. But you know, you can't. I mean, I'm in no position to knock Amazon to a certain extent because
nobody dare
use it. I mean, but it's kind of that thing. But on if you look at it like I do, I don't. I mean. My goal is to have people read books. And in some ways, it's not up to me to decide whether they buy their books at Amazon or if they buy their books at Barnes & Noble or if they go to their local bookseller. You know, I'd be out of business if I was said, you have to buy your book only from an independent bookseller. And so I've just taken the view that it's not up to me. I'll just make it available however I can.
What's a typical run for one of your books?
It totally depends at this point. I take advantage of small press runs now, the print-on-demand type stuff, because you can get fewer. And like poetry, I love doing one or two poetry books a year, but I'm not a total fool. Well, I'm kind of a total fool, but I got 1% of me that's not. So I usually don't run many at a time. You know, the runs can run anywhere from 400 or 500 all the way up to 2,500 or 3,000 or so.
But that's respectable.
Oh, yeah. And plus, really nothing ever goes out of print. Like the poet here in town, Sal Marisi, I've done a couple books of his. And, you know, we run a few hundred. They sell out. I run a few more hundred. They sell out again. I mean, he's probably on his fourth or fifth reprint on both of those books. And so,
which would mean how many?
several hundred, like not quite 1,000, but
poetry does not move the way prose does.
No, it doesn't. Even, you know, Ted Kooser comes to town, they place a big order for 40. I mean, he's this, you know, he was the poet laureate of the country. So it's a totally different thing. Writers and everyone's always worried about the actual numbers, but because of the way you're able to sell now, the total number that you have on hand isn't really a big deal anymore.
But you've also, I noticed one of the poets you publish is Mary Swander, the poet laureate of Iowa.
Yeah.
That's
right. I do well with her also.
Right.
And because she's the poet laureate, she really is able to get out a lot. And
right.
I mean, it's unfair that not many people, you know, you mentioned the word poetry, and I swear people either like,
they
fall asleep. I did this Claire Hugh book last year, which people love Claire Hughes when they hear them, but they don't tie, like, it's poetry also.
Right.
It's like, what's that one Sir Isaac Newton kept hollering and hooting and turned his depravity into laws of gravity?
What possessed you to do a Clara Hugh book?
Well, I go down to Prairie Lights, and Paul's the book buyer there, and every time I'd go in, he'd be like, I got a new Claire Hugh to share with you. And I'd listen to him and I'd laugh.
We better explain what a Claire Hugh is.
It's a short four-line poem, and it normally is an AABB rhyme scheme. And the kind of like Paul told me that Edmund Claire Hugh Bentley, but they're called Claire Hughes. And he started them because he wanted something cleaner than a limerick, and Paul just laughs. It's like, I don't know what he was thinking, because they're not cleaner. And so And mostly you use them to mock someone. Yeah, you pick sort of a well-known person, and then you turn around and you sort of mock them a second time.
Right.
And so there's lots of them. Like Jung and Freud always get one. And the book I have, not all of them are great for to repeat on the air. But I don't know. Every time I'd go in, he'd have another one. And I just loved him. And when I was little, I found a guy that had done a few Clara Hughes, and that Newton one was in there, you know. And like another example, and this isn't one of Paul's, you have to buy his book for that, The Lost Clara Hughes of Paul Ingram. But what was his? Aristotle was the perfect model for being clever with the lever. So you've always got, and they're not based on being totally true at all times, but there's sort of a hint of like, this is kind of what the person was like, or this is something that they did.
Several times you've mentioned the Midwest. Are you looking for material particularly that written by or that takes place in or relates to the Midwest?
Yeah, you know, and it's really broad. And on the one hand, people think that's an easy subject because they're like, but it's really, it's this wide open area and the Midwest is not easy to explain. But it's just something that I understand, and so that's why I'm drawn to it. I mean, I don't think if I got a biography or a memoir about someone growing up in northern Idaho, then I'd really feel like I was invested in it, and I wouldn't know how to share it necessarily.
Do you do hardbound and softbound or paperbound?
Sadly, I do e-books too now every once in a while. And so if you sometimes I do – it's weird how – people like ebooks, not a whole bunch, but maybe 8% of the people just love to get their ebook. But I do hardcovers. I've done full color photo books. I did one on called Chasing Weather earlier this year, and it's the storm chaser who, I guess, in some ways, who wouldn't want to be a storm chaser? But when people say the Midwest isn't exciting, I say take a look in this book. There's tornadoes whipping around his head. There's these dramatic open prairie landscape photos of cloud formations, and in and of itself it's just artwork, the way you get the different colors of sunset and sunrises. And that one, that's a full color, 144 offset.
But how do people find out about your books? Do you rely to any extent on reviews? How do you market?
I guess I just model myself after every other company out there in some ways. I mean, I'm doing a book by Patrick Ireland. It's coming out in October. It's a crime murder set in the Quad Cities. I guess that's why I'm thinking about it now. But 4 months ago, he came to me. It usually takes me about 12 to 16 months to run it out. So I get a book sent to me that I like, and I'll pick that. And that's a whole nother category. I know. How do you get picked? Let's say you're one of the lucky people. I do about 5 or 6 a year. And so we go over the book, and I read it. He reads it again. We edit it up, and then we run some galleys. And we always run galleys because you got to get reviews from Publishers Weekly or Shelf Awareness 4 or 5 months ahead of time. And then you can put those on your book cover. And at that point, you start telling all the stores about it, and you're telling your distributor. I go to a trade show every year, and all the booksellers come, and I sit around and struggle with them to tell them, what do you want this year? And you hope something catches with them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a constant, nonstop effort to try and sell books. I mean, it's because you sell, sometimes I wish I sold bridges because, you sell thousands of books a year.
I know you take writers around to interview with radio stations and television stations.
And I get really close. I mean, I don't pick an author unless I like them. That doesn't mean that I'm like best friends with them.
Right.
But that's part of what I said at the beginning is like, it's really critical to me who I pick because it's such a small operation that I don't meet all of them in person, but a lot of the writers I do. And Paul wanted to come and he got to do that show with Bruce Carter, and he couldn't get here unless I drove him. So I'm happy to drive him here. And I guess it's a combination of passion and work all wrapped up into one.
And you talk about the tug of war, so to speak, between self-publishing and using a publisher. Mm-hmm. And you hear people talk about, well, I'll self-publish because I can keep most all the profits. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend who's passed away now but had over 20 books. you know, all of which in circulation, and she did not make a living out of that at all.
Right.
So the return for the author is pretty slim because you have to, you bear all the costs. How do you work that out? How do you convince authors to let you publish them?
Well, I've never had the problem where I've sort of had the opposite. Like, I don't have a problem with someone saying, because I usually only take things that people submit to me or I talk to them about how they, most people would prefer to have a standard publisher these days that I meet. But some people that are really energetic can do all right with self-publishing. But what I always think is curious is when I have someone come to me and they self-publish their book, and then they tell me that like it's this great honor. And I always think to myself, well, you know, they'll say, oh, I sold like 800 books or whatever number they say. And I think, well, then you shouldn't tell me that because pretty much I don't have that many more ideas than you have. And so if you've already self-published it and you come to me saying that and you've already done it, then there's not necessarily that much left for me to do. I'm going to get them into new places that they haven't been in before. But I mean, if I know someone's already sold a few thousand copies of a book, then A, I would wonder why they wanted to do it with me, because they probably are making some money at that point. Or I don't. And so that's the thing that I get into a lot. And a lot of people want the mystery of how to make money as a publisher. And, you know, I don't think I could sit down and tell you what it is. I've been doing it for a long time, so I know what I'm doing. And it has to do with being impassioned about the books. It has to do with marketing. It has to do with editing. It has to do with being friends with the author and encouraging and screening how it is that I'm going to be able to work with them. It has to do with the timing that you bring a book out. It has to do with covers, sadly. I mean, I love doing a cover, but if you do a bad cover, you're destined to not have it sell sometimes.
But do you get to do any writing yourself these days?
Yeah, I know I started out of this whole thing to be a writer, and I don't do a whole lot. And that sounds kind of depressing.
But what he does, I've read some of his writing, and I would call it Midwest surreal.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's close to science fiction, but not quite
science fiction.
It's like that,
what do they call it, magic realism.
Yeah,
of the Midwest.
Midwestern magic realism.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I did a book recently on herons, but it's kind of an extensive rewriting of a book I did before. But, you know, I surprised myself because I actually kind of have enjoyed enabling other writers to become successful writers. And I feel like I'm going to write something. And people are usually asking me, what do you write now? And I have ideas and I kind of go in little spurts where I'm like, okay, this book, I'm going to see it through. But, I guess I'm not as driven to be a writer myself as I was when I first started. And in some ways that's kind of depressing, but in other ways it's not.
That's kind of good though for authors, because if you have this feeling for writing and you've been in it yourself, then they know they're going to have a sympathetic publisher.
That's another thing that I think does work for me is that I really do understand what it's like to be a writer, because I've been to readings where no one shows up. I'll never forget one of my first readings. It was on Rivers and Trees, and I walked in and there was two people there, which is bad enough on its own right. And of course you realize one of them is the owner of the store.
Right.
And the other person, I said, well, I'm glad you're here. What? And she found out what the book was about. She's like, oh, I thought it was about something else to do with Rivers. I'm like, that's fine. You know what? Just don't stay.
Yeah.
This is too ridiculous to sit here and read.
Right.
Well, Steve, this has been illuminating. And I want to thank you for taking time to visit with us on Scribble today. We've been talking to Steve Semkin, who is an author, but he's the founder and owner of Ice Cube Press.
Right.
We'll be back to take a look at, shake out the book bag to see what's in there. But before we do that, our good friend Garrison Keillor steps up to the microphone.